Hi, I'm Mark Brody, and this is the Friday Newscap Podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
What I've tried to demonstrate in these 6 years is you don't have to burn down the rules and the norms to achieve what you want. You can just do the hard work.
Each commissioner was admonished on the confidentiality of the proceeding in executive session at the outset of the session.
They have not given you an example because there is no example, because this is a witch hunt and it's gross and it's a misuse of taxpayer dollars to settle political scores like this.
The appropriate question is, why does Governor Hobbs not want Arizona lawmakers and the public to know what's going on with abortion and how to help women?
If I sound alarmist, it's because I am. I'm here to sound alarm that we are headed to California home prices if we don't prioritize housing.
We'll be defunding a sheriff that doesn't want to do the job regarding immigration, and we'll be increasing the funding for sheriffs who do want to fight illegal immigration.
And with me to talk about Senator Kyrsten Sinema saying goodbye to the U.S. Senate, Governor Hobbs wanting to do away with abortion reporting requirements, and more, is former state school superintendent Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez flying solo today. Jaime, thanks for being here.
Oh, pleasure to be here. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you as well. So let's start with Senator Kyrsten Sinema. This is a Senate tradition. When you are leaving the chamber, you get to sort of give a farewell speech there. And one of the things that stood out to a lot of folks was, and we heard a little bit of it just a moment ago, was really a continued strong defense of the filibuster, which she very staunchly defended during her time in the Senate.
Correct. She, I think, came to that position in large measure because of her friendship and her closeness with Jeff Flake. When Jeff Flake was U.S. Senator, he too defended cloture and believed that you have to have the 60 members in order to advance legislation. And I think Kyrsten, over the years, started to realize and became a big fan of that because she felt like that was the only way to create, and a lot of her speech reflected this, mm-hmm. that was the only way to create true bipartisan and meaningful legislation that people can rally around. When you have the opportunity for just a simple majority to pass these things, then you would get wild swings with whatever party it was in control. I mean, we're going to see that with Republicans coming back. Republicans are probably, they fought the Democrats from having it. Now I think a lot of Republicans are going to say, well, we should have that in order to advance our agenda.
Do you think the filibuster stands?
I do. I think there's enough legislators or senators. I mean, because remember, you only need a few
right.
to block it. And that's where Kyrsten got into trouble. She was one of the very few, maybe it was just that two or three Democrats that said, no, we're not going to go along with that. And so when she took that position and it kept the Democrats from moving forward, a lot of the more progressive bases issues that they wanted to see happen, Ruben Gallego jumps into the primary.
Mm.
And that created the structure which she thought in large measure that her popularity was bigger than what it was, and that, oh, I'm just going to move to independent. It's not going to be a problem. But it was a problem. As we know, that when you don't have that base of support, it gets very, very difficult to get reelected.
So looking – when we look back on Senator Sinema's term in the Senate, you know, she was elected. A lot of folks said, you know, she could maybe be the next John McCain,
correct.
You know, sort of a maverick having the seat for, you know, basically as long as she wanted it. When we look back, you know, we have a little distance from the end of her term. What do you think people will be saying about Kyrsten Sinema's one term in the U.S. Senate?
Well, the one thing I would say about that, I've been asked that question a lot about, you know, her similarities to John McCain. But, you know, I knew John McCain fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that people forget, he was a very strong Republican. He was a partisan.
Yeah.
And so when he ran in the primaries, a lot of times he was attacked by the media for being so draconian in his views. Remember, he talked about building the dang wall, get the wall built.
Yeah.
And so I just think that he understood that you have to understand the politics of your party in order to, of course, win the primary, but then put yourself in a good position to win the general, which he did, I think, six times.
Yeah. At least for the Senate, not
correct.
To mention the races he won
right.
for the U.S. House and won, of course, the presidential nomination
correct.
As a Republican. So, I mean,
so her legacy, It'll be mixed. I think she did a number of things. Even Mark Kelly came out and talked about and was laudatory to her. I think, though, that a lot of times history isn't kind to just one term. Again, with Jeff Flake, mm-hmm. you know, he still is derided by a lot of the Republicans in the base. So I'm not sure the Democrats are going to look back with a lot of favor.
Not a lot of fondness there, maybe?
Not a lot of fondness.
Well, I mean, she really kind of ticked off a lot of Democrats in the state. I mean, to the point that she ultimately left the party.
Correct. Correct. And I think that leaves a bad taste in a lot of the Democrats' mouth. So, but I think her ability to be successful and have an impact, I don't think she's going to come back in any way, shape, or form as an elected leader. I think her days, that's over. I know you should never say never, but it's going to be very difficult for her, unless she becomes a Republican and all of a sudden has a metamorphosis. But I don't see her wanting to run for some kind of a local office. But having said that, she's still going to have a big voice. I think people still respect her. I think the business community, by and large, has liked her notion of trying to bring that kind of bipartisanship together that a lot of people like. So she'll still be a force in Arizona and nationally as well.
All right. So speaking, I guess, not really of bipartisanship, let me ask you about the America Fest event happening downtown Phoenix last night. A lot of speakers. President-elect Trump will be there on Sunday. I would imagine that, like, for an event like this, you have, in just a couple of weeks, for the Republicans, you're taking control, basically, of the federal government. Your preferred presidential candidate will be taking the oath of office in, what, 3 or 4 weeks from now.
Correct.
Like, I would imagine this is, like, it's going to be a pretty celebratory event down there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's going to be a lot of folks saying, see, I told you so. And Turning Point has led the effort, and this America Fest is being organized by Turning Point, yeah. Charlie Kirk's organization. And so I think that when you win Arizona, which was supposed to be a state that a lot of folks said Harris was going to win up until about a week before the election, and they ended up winning by 5.5% margin, almost 200,000 votes, then I think they deserve to have a little bit of a celebration. And I think Trump is smart to continue to recognize that Arizona has been a very strong state for him. It's interesting because it gives a lot of voice to these folks that I think haven't had a strong voice. I mean, we lost our U.S. senators, but they're going to come in and gloat a little bit. And I think with the folks that are coming in, I mean, nationally, it puts a lot of emphasis on the president saying, see, if you just back what I do, we can be successful like we were in Arizona.
Is any of that tempered, maybe not even at that particular event, but just sort of among the GOP, the MAGA base broadly, with what's going on Capitol Hill right now, where President-elect Trump had a preferred government funding bill, which the House did not pass last night.
Right.
Like, is any of that tempered by sort of the realities of actually governing now?
Well, yes and no. I mean, and understand that I think a lot of the reason why President Trump and through his surrogates like Elon Musk were very critical of the original proposition or proposal was that it didn't do anything about the debt ceiling. President Trump has said, move it back to past my presidency or eliminate it altogether. Now, the reason that seems kind of antithetical for Republicans to hear that, and some of the hard right did not like that.
Right.
But for him to do the kinds of tax reductions that he's talked about, some have talked about that it would be a hit of about $8 trillion over 10 years, then having that debt ceiling would make that almost impossible. And so when you get that barrier out of the way, it allows him and his new administration to really go after and be aggressive and rally the Republicans around the proposals that they probably could get through Congress.
Interesting.
But the debt ceiling is that cap.
Right.
That's going to be difficult to do. So I think he wants to come in and make sure that major pathway is cleared so that they can focus on things that he campaigned over.
Right. Jaime, let me ask you about something that Governor Hobbs said this week. The state, as required by law, the health department came out with its annual report of basically its abortion report, like some of the demographic data, the number of procedures performed. Governor Hobbs says she would like to do away with it. The state, it's really not the state's business, you know, how many times this happens or any of that kind of data. Is there any chance that the Republican legislature will go along with that?
No. Short answer, no. Okay. So a lot of this issue is there is a voluntary requirement by the federal government to provide this kind of information. And each state is, we have varying degrees of state reporting. Now, Arizona does have a very extensive requirements. I think we have like 26 questions that are asked. But unlike the governor's rhetoric around this, and I think keeping the issue of reproductive rights is important for her as a Democrat politician, because that tends to be favorable, as we saw, the initiative to basically allow abortions to continue in Arizona passed pretty significantly, which shows that, by and large, people would support that, to get, allowing women to have that choice. But now that that issue is done, essentially, right, the Republicans can't come in with a legislation to say we want to repeal abortion in Arizona. They can't do it because it's in our Constitution, unless they want to go to the voters again.
And voter protected.
Correct. So governor has to come up with some things to keep this issue out there, because it – when you talk about abortion issues, that tends to help Democrats in their elections. When abortion isn't a big issue, when you're talking about, like in this election cycle, like we talked about before the election, when I was in here, border security and the economy, that helped Republicans. So for her to come out and try and create a wedge issue and say, well, you're capturing data and you're going after privacy of individuals. Well, they're really not. I mean, if you look at the law, it does not require... and they cannot report a person's name, a person's address.
And it's
person's
all anonymized.
Social security.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just the issues around it. What kind of procedure did they get? What location provided it? So, yes, we do have extensive requirements, but it does not give any personal information of the woman that's having those procedures.
How beneficial might it be for the governor, though, as you say, to create a wedge issue, but a wedge issue that, as you point out, she has almost no chance of getting her way on?
Well, again, it goes back to the political rhetoric. I think it helps with her base in saying, look, I'm still fighting for these issues to protect women's rights. I think they're hoping that it may catch on, and it creates an issue that the media will continue, so that when she – I guarantee you this is going to be one of the big topics in her State of the State speech. Mm. Even though they know that legislatively they have very, very little chance of getting it done, they're still going to use it as a big political message of what they want to accomplish, and see how bad these Republicans are that are allowing for privacy information. And even though I mentioned that kind of information is not disclosed, they're going to continue to say that. So as you know, sometimes in politics, the more you say it, the more real it becomes.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to continue to say that, hoping that people think, well, that's what's going on.
All right. Jaime, let me ask you lastly before I let you go about, I hate to ask what might be a cynical political question here, but this week, the lone Democrat on the Arizona Corporation Commission was censured over allegedly disclosing information from a closed door, an executive session, a closed door meeting out in the public. I'm curious about the timing of this, because Anna Tovar is not going to be a corporation commissioner in a couple of weeks. Her term is up. Was this just a political act?
Again, short answer, yes.
All right.
Because Anna Tovar, though, prior to this, had also been critical and asked the Attorney General, Chris Mays, to look into open meeting law violations against her fellow members.
Yeah.
That they were making policies that was not in the public forum. So, well, guess what? They have the majority. They're going to come back and say, wait a minute, you're the one that should be censured. So, and they sent their complaint, of course, not to the Attorney General, who's a Democrat and same party as Anna Tovar. They sent it to Rachel Mitchell, who's
county,
the
county attorney.
Maricopa County attorney. So, yes, there's a lot of – I know you and the listenership is shocked.
Shocked.
But sometimes we do have politics in Arizona.
It's shocking when politicians do political things, right?
Correct.
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Jaime Molera of Molera Alvarez, thanks so much for coming in. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's biggest stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. I'm Mark Brody. Thanks for listening.